UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We won't report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merger 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Do we just call about the UFOs that are?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
And it is
matched.
Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls?
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome wherever in the world you are listening from tonight. This episode we are joined by Tammy in Colorado, sharing her ET encounters. Tammy also works nationally and internationally as a medium, traveling, seeking and finding deceased children that have been tortured mentally and physically through human experiments like the MK Ultra programs and need help in crossing over. But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the show, Tammy.
Thank you for having me. I'm very glad to be here.
I'm calling from Colorado.
Yes, we are just a little about an hour south of Denver.
I've actually had quite a few guests the last week around Colorado.
It's a beautiful state. We have a little bit of snow right now, gorgeous in the summer, and the mountains. Can't complain.
I hear the skies are nice and clear as well, and lovely clean air.
Yes, we have many, many days of sunshine. It's wonderful.
Lovely. Okay. Now, you're going to be sharing several experiences with our listeners tonight. Would you like to start at the beginning, please, Tammy?
Sure. Previous to, probably about 5 or 6 years ago, I didn't really have much or any experience with extraterrestrials, UFOs. Of course, I'd heard different stories. Everyone has probably seen pictures or drawings of grays and a variety of other extraterrestrials online or in books. But that was essentially the extent of my experience. But things started changing a little after I turned 40, maybe I was 41, I'm 46 right now. And I began having deceased children come to me, talking to me about how they had been tortured through MK Ultra, how they had been experimented upon by our government, mostly our government, the United States government, how they had been tortured, what the experiments were for, sometimes where they were when they were still alive, and they needed help crossing over. So that's where it really began. It moved from there to it wasn't just the government participating in experiments, it was extraterrestrials participating in experiments. And again, all of this was really unknown to me for the most part previous to, previously to 2015 or so. So it was quite a surprise. And as we, when I say we, I mean myself and two other women, we began traveling to different states, assisting children to cross over, and they shared their stories. I wrote about all of this in Silent Whispers, What One Thinks is Crazy and Another Knows is True, and then Silent Whispers, The Power Within, books one and two, both on Amazon. Sharing the different experiences and assisting these children to cross over, but also coming in contact with some of these extraterrestrials who were not happy that we were assisting children to cross over. What I came to learn is just because they had died didn't mean the experiments ended. You know, when we physically die, we lose our physical body, but we don't lose our emotional state, our mental state, our spirit. That is still very much existing. And some of the experiments continued upon their emotional body, continuing their fear, continuing a variety of experiments, mostly through the extraterrestrials. And so we began coming in contact with them at that point. One of the trips that we went on was out to Mount Blanca, Colorado, which is a high desert area, very hot in the summer. And we actually went in the summer in July. 2016, I believe. Anyway, it was just a few years ago or so. In that experience, we didn't know why we were going out, that we had just been, it had been suggested that we go out there. And there's not much out there. There are a lot of rumors of cattle mutilation, UFOs, a lot of stories. But it's very, it's a very expansive desert. The sand dunes are out there. We stayed at a wonderful woman's Airbnb. But as we were driving around and exploring, one of the other ladies, Andrea, and I left the car to go walking around in the vicinity. We had pulled up near an old cemetery. We were not interested in the cemetery. It just happened to be there, but that was the general location. The other lady, Tina, she stayed in the car, pulling thistles out of her shoes. And, you know, we didn't see much of anything in that particular spot. Disappointed, really confused. Why are we here? What's the point of all of this? And we walked back to the car and we were about to leave. And I noticed something on my driver's side window, not the windshield, but right next to me on my left. I didn't see it immediately. I saw it, the reflection from the window, and it was a symbol. It was a little hard to make out. The sun was so bright. It was so hot that day. But we did. I was able to take a couple of pictures the best I could. It was an amazing symbol that just appeared there out of the blue in less than 10 minutes in an isolated area near an old cemetery. There was not a soul in sight except for the three of us. And again, Tina had been in the car the whole time. So how did this symbol appear on my car when someone was right there? She had her back turned, but she was right there. We showed it to the lady who we were renting the Airbnb from, and she'd lived in the area for just a super long time. And she had no explanation. No one really had an explanation, but she had a friend down the street and said that he was, I think she said, an engineer or an architect, something along those lines. And then, of course, he would find some logical explanation. Well, he came up and looked at it, and he didn't have an explanation. He was also fascinated. He, though, was able to take a picture and then on his computer put a green color behind it, so that you could more easily see the symbol, exactly what it looked like. It almost looked like a map, almost looked like a star system map. I mean, it was circular. It had also some lines, some horizontal lines or diagonal lines, but it was perfect. It was a perfect drawing, like someone had put a stamp on the dust on the window of my car. And we still didn't quite know how it appeared there or why it was there. But we did find out some information about the area. If anyone ever heard of the person Nellie Lewis, she back in the 60s lived in the area, and her horse went missing. She eventually found it, I think the next day or 2 days later. It wasn't too long, but she eventually found it. It had been raining. There had been cattle mutilations in the area, and she found the horse dead by itself. There were no tracks of any kind, and again, it had been raining, so that it was sandy. It's a very sandy area. And what was weird about it is that it had been mutilated in such a manner that it didn't make any logical sense. There was no blood, no tissue above the neck. The brain had been removed, the eyes, the muscle, the skin, everything from the neck up had been removed except for the bones, just the tissue. But there was no blood, there were no tracks, and nothing came near it. No other predators came near this horse, this deceased horse. She claimed it was UFOs, and even went to the local newspaper to talk about it. There's a picture of it online. Anyone can look it up. Nellie Lewis, and I believe her horse was called Lady, was the name she named it, but then it had a nickname. But I can't recall the nickname right now. But through a Google search, it can be found. She claimed it was UFOs. There was no explanation. The sheriff did an investigation, and he claimed it was lightning, which also didn't make any sense. But nothing really came of it because no one had an answer. It is said that she started talking more and more about extraterrestrials and UFOs. And it just so happened that my family had purchased through a nonprofit many, many years ago, back in the 80s, had purchased created a nonprofit and purchased a property for that nonprofit on her land. It used to be her property. And I had heard stories about her. She died in the 70s. She talked about being approached by the men in black to be quiet, to stop talking. And she insisted on continuing to go to the newspaper, the local newspaper, and talking about extraterrestrials and what she'd been experiencing and seeing and the UFOs. And she mysteriously committed suicide by carbon monoxide poisoning next to that exact cemetery that my car was at when that symbol appeared. We later found out that she claimed to have been communicating with some extraterrestrials. She wrote about it in her journals, and there was a connection between the ones who put the symbol on my car and what she wrote about in her journals that were later stolen at different times. They were both hidden and both stolen, so they're gone. That was really the beginning of the experience, and it with that particular symbol. That symbol appeared again on one of our trips to Wyoming. We were going to investigate Lander, assisting deceased children, and coming in contact with different extraterrestrials, different types, ones that are, I would say, quite familiar, and ones that look very human, but don't seem to have any type of emotion. One morning, I think it was our second morning there, Andrea had just finished taking her shower, had just turned off the water, and she started screaming that we needed to get in the bathroom. And what was in the bathroom was steamed up glass. There was a wall between toilet and the sink. On that steamed up glass was the same exact symbol that was on my car, except there was one variation. There was one tiny circle within the larger circle. It was in a different spot, but this symbol wasn't just on the steamed up glass once. There were nine. There were a total of nine symbols, and that tiny circle inside was in a different spot for each of the nine. During all of this, as I stated earlier, the some of the extraterrestrials didn't appear to be happy that we were essentially removing, helping these children leave their painful reality and were no longer available to be experimented upon. So in about, it was around 2018, I believe, somewhere around there. And we had a trip planned to Albuquerque. For Albuquerque, before we even got to Albuquerque, I started getting bothered in my house. It's just weird feelings, weird energy. A gray, more than one gray, would appear in my bedroom at night, starting to scare me. I was guessing that they were trying to scare me enough to not go to Albuquerque. I didn't know why Albuquerque was so important that they would go to this length. And I kept resisting and kept pushing back and trying to feel safe and just not scared. But then one night, I woke up, it was around 3 a.m., and I was kind of turned toward my husband. And I felt this weird wave over my head, like someone had just waved their hand over my hair. And I knew instantly that there was someone, something in the room. And I looked across where my husband is, and there was a gray standing right in front of him with red eyes. And I was paralyzed. I tried to move. I couldn't move anything. I couldn't move my head. I could breathe, but I couldn't move any other part of my body. And I was absolutely frightened to a degree I've never, ever experienced before or since. And he just stood there, just stood there and stared at me with no emotion, almost like it was a robot. The eyes were not blinking. And not only that, when he was standing there staring at me, I could hear noises. I could hear noises out in the hallway, downstairs. I could hear a light. It all sounded like someone was going through stuff, rumbling around through drawers very, very quietly. It was definitely a sound like someone was moving around and going through something. I just kept staring at this gray and trying to fight this paralysis. And finally, I broke it. But the gray didn't move. He continued just standing there staring at me. And I sat up and I just started screaming as loud as I could that he needed to get the, I don't know, I don't want to say a bad word, but I was using bad words. And just to get out of my house. And I was screaming at the top of my lungs. My poor husband woke up so frightened of my screaming that he almost rolled off the bed, but he had his back to the gray. He was looking at me like, why are you screaming? And, you know, he's been with me long enough to not expect a completely logical explanation. He just put the pillow over his head and tried to go back to sleep. I only screamed a couple of times for it to get out, but it just stood there. It didn't get out immediately. It continued standing there, staring at me. So I screamed again for it to get out, and then it disappeared. And then eventually the noise downstairs went away. That was the first and only time that I've been paralyzed. But there were other times where they would make themselves known. They would come in to my bedroom. They would look at me, but they didn't paralyze me at that point in time. There was another time later after Albuquerque that they came in and started choking me. Again, it was the same way. This time, though, I could turn my head. I could move my head back and forth, but the rest of my body was paralyzed. And I could feel this choking sensation. And I just saw their shadows. I was laying straight on my back this time. So all I could see was a ceiling, and there were shadows on the ceiling. And they eventually let go of that. And then a different time, again after that, where I had my, I like to wear an eye mask when I go to sleep just to keep everything nice and dark. And I had that on at that point in time. And again, the choking sensation. But I knew I was awake. I could feel my eyelashes hitting up against the eye mask. It was at this point that my daughter had moved back in. My daughter and grandson had moved back in. And I could hear my daughter getting ready for work out in the bathroom that's in the hallway. That only lasted for a few seconds. And then it was done. It was over. I believe that was the final time that they ever bothered me. So through this experience, I've been learning that there are so many different species of extraterrestrials. There are ones who want to create harm. There are ones who want to experiment. There are ones that want to assist the Earth. There are ones who assist humanity to a degree. But it's my understanding that more are invested assisting the Earth than they are humanity. But there are definitely ones that want to use humans for their own particular purpose. And it's important to discern the difference between the different ones. Just because an extraterrestrial looks a certain way doesn't mean they have dark intentions. They can actually have very loving intentions. Not every extraterrestrial has the absence of an emotional body. There can be extraterrestrials that are full of emotion, full of love, full of compassion. And then there are ones like the Grays that simply don't have an emotional body. They don't have the capacity to feel. They simply act almost like robots. So I have completed the series so far of Silent Whispers, and we might be taking another trip. We have not had another trip since we went out to Bradshaw Ranch in Sedona, Arizona. We might be planning another trip at some point in 2021. But our trip out to Bradshaw Ranch was by far probably the most exciting, aside from the symbols that appeared seemingly randomly. In Bradshaw Ranch, we went to visit, it is pretty isolated, but abandoned area, where it's rumored that there is a vortex where different dimensional beings can go in and out, where the Grays appear, different things have happened there. It's no longer, no one lives there. It's actually owned by the government, but there is a college that oversees the buildings, the two abandoned buildings, because they're using the land to do research on different crops. But other than that, no one was there when we went in March of 2019. And it was pretty creepy. That was, though, the first time I actually got a picture of a Gray. I didn't know it at first. I was taking a picture of the abandoned building, the two of them, but one in particular I took a picture of. The whole area felt so creepy, so creepy. And after I took the picture, I told Andrea, we need to go. We need to get out of here. And when we were walking down the long driveway to climb over the gate, you're not supposed to be in that area. It says, didn't say no trespassing, but you're not allowed to be in the area. But we did anyway. So we walked back down the driveway to climb over the fence. And I just felt like eyes were burning into my back. But I didn't know why. I kept turning around looking. I didn't see anything. I just knew it felt super creepy. Well, later, back at the house that we rented for a couple of nights, I sent the picture off to my husband just to show him, you know, this is the building. This is an abandoned building at Bradshaw Ranch. And he's the one who replied saying, I see something in the window. I thought he was joking. But when I zoomed into the photograph, there was clearly a Gray standing in the window staring at me. I put that picture on my blog for my book, silentwhispersbook.com. You can go to, when you go to that blog, you can click on Bradshaw Ranch pictures and you'll eventually come to the Gray. There was that picture. And then there were, the next day we went back and there was one set of footprints in the sand behind one of the other buildings. And it's not a footprint that looks recognizable. It's not a human footprint by any means. It's too big for a bird. And it's certainly not a mountain lion or a cougar or anything like that. It was kind of a weird footprint, shaped footprint. But there was only one set. So there was no footprints leading up to it, and there were no footprints going away from it. It was just one set. That picture is also on my blog. And then when we were out walking, Tina pointed out to me that something looked interesting and a beautiful big tree. I didn't see anything in particular, but I went ahead and took a picture of the tree because it was so pretty. It was very soon after that, you know, minutes after that, I was looking at it and zoomed in. And there's clearly, at least to me, clearly, some type of being, some type of non-human standing in the tree. We left to go to a different part of Bradshaw Ranch. When I came back, it was about an hour later, went back to the tree, took another picture, and it's clearly different. There's a clear difference between the two trees, but it's the same tree, only an hour different. I also did the same thing with the window that the gray appeared in. I went back the next day, took another picture of the very same window, and it's very different. It's clearly in that window in the second picture that nothing's really there. It's obvious to me that there is a gray standing in that one window.
Join me, George Norrie, for the Worldwide Contact in the Desert Virtual UFO Conference, June 25th to June 28th. Contact in the Desert is an epic weekend of adventure jam-packed with exciting explorations into UFOs, ancient civilizations, AI, crop circles, forbidden archaeology, disclosure, and the newest evidence of ongoing contact, sightings, and leading-edge science. This amazing weekend delivers more than 130 presentations and special events showcasing 67 speakers from all over the world, with 2 extra weeks to view your favorite leading experts, including Avi Loeb with Clyde Lewis, Linda Moulton Howe, Paul Hellyer, John Lear, Russell Targ, David Childress, Doc Wallach, and more. With breaking articles in the New York Times and acknowledged naval sightings, and more importantly, the new release of classified documents on the day of the soft opening of Contact in the Desert, we are your source for inside information. Join us June 25th at contactinthedesert.com to get your tickets today. Make contact, contactinthedesert.com.
Those are essentially my experiences in a nutshell. In Silent Whispers, it's creative nonfiction, which just means that it's all nonfiction, it's all truthful, but it's written like a novel, it's written like a story. I do write about when we went out to Montauk, New York, on Long Island, Los Alamos, New Mexico. We went out to Area 51. We went out to Sedona, Mount Blanca, Wyoming. We went twice. We went out to California. I think that is it. Different. Sometimes we went to a state twice. New Mexico, actually, I guess probably 3 times. But all of those, every place that we visited is talked about, discussed in Silent Whispers, and what we encountered, how we felt, what we experienced. And then there were a couple of times that we encountered a person who had some experience. When we went to Los Alamos, we took an Uber to dinner and got a different Uber on the way back from dinner. And it just so happened that our driver used to be an employee at the National Laboratory there in Los Alamos. And he had some interesting stuff to say. In Montauk, which was our very first trip, it was the dead of winter. It was actually in January. And before we finished everything up, we were going to leave Montauk and head back. We went to the Lighthouse restaurant, cafe. And we were just sitting there trying to get warm next to the fire. And a person sat down across from us and he started chatting. He was, at least at that time, an employee for the lands and maintenance for Camp Hero, which is right there in Montauk, which is very haunted. And he was very open about he didn't know what was true, what wasn't. He'd heard a lot of different stories, but he had his own experience that he talked to us about that's also written in the book. So it was interesting running into different people on our trips who could share some information, and it seemingly randomly. But it's been quite the adventure. I don't think I would replace it for anything. And thankfully, I'm no longer bothered by any extraterrestrials or any type of experience like that.
Wonderful, Tammy. Interesting as well. For our listeners, MK Ultra was a mind control experiment which went back all the way to the 50s, probably even back further with the Nazis, I believe. And it didn't really come to the public's attention until, I think, the 70s. But apparently it's supposed to have stopped now, but I doubt that very much. I think it's pretty much still going, probably with a different code name.
Yes, I truly believe that it's still, well, I do know it's still going. The children that were coming to visit me dated back, their deaths dated back to World War II. Some were directly connected to the Holocaust, so it wasn't just our country, but some were, a lot of them, most of them were here in the United States, had died here in the United States. So dating back to the Second World War all the way up to the 2000s. And I have no doubt that it's still going on, because when you're getting benefit from something, if you are a government entity and you're able to access human subjects to do experiments on for a variety of medications, a variety of other things, medical treatments, immune response, and you don't have to hold any accountability, and you can do it in secret. You many times take children who are runaways or abandoned within the foster system or abused. In some cases, some kids were sold into it by their own families. But most of the children told me how they end up getting to that point. It was always horrific. Very few were in loving families. And if they were in loving families, the family was so poor that no one really cared. And if you are a government entity and you have that access and you're able to go underground and keep it a secret, why would you? That's my thinking.
How did the deceased children actually approach you? Were they actually aware that they were under this program?
They never called it MK Ultra. I mean, they didn't give me those types of labels. What they would share with me, usually how they were taken or how they ended up where they were when they were still alive. And if they were old enough, they could articulate what was happening to them and sometimes why, like what the scientists were looking for specifically. Sometimes they would just tell me that, you know, some of their skin was removed, or a lot of mind control stuff. So some of the children told me they were forced to torture animals. Some of the kids were forced to torture each other, pretty much for the purpose of seeing how to remove the ability to feel compassion. And compassion is actually held in the brain. Can't remember the exact location of the brain at this point. It's a really long, complicated word. But there was a variety of reasons for each experiment. They could tell me that. And the really young children, they would just tell me what hurt. And, you know, whether it was a man or a woman that hurt them, and sometimes what they did to the children. But the younger children didn't have the comprehension to articulate, well, this is what they did, and this is why. Some of the older kids, the teenagers, some of them could articulate that information. All of the ones that came to me were kids, whether they were really young, like 4 or 5 years old, or 18, 19 years old, and everywhere in between.
And this directly relates to split personalities as well, doesn't it, where they fragment the mind or through this abuse?
Yes, there were definitely some cases there where they were really experimenting with the brain and the mind.
And some of the things they did, absolutely shocking they did to these children. And of course, they'd have to be a young age, wouldn't they, which is terrible.
Yes, it was always horrific to hear how much pain these children were put through. And the on top of that, they were stuck. You know, they just kept repeating, looping the same cycle and over again, caught in their reality of pain. And so our purpose was to help them move out of that and move on so they didn't have to keep repeating it.
It's absolutely heartbreaking. How many children do you reckon have really been affected by this?
Oh, boy. You know, it's hard that's a hard guess for me. I can say that the ones who came to either me when I was at my house, this all started at my house. It just started showing up, sharing their stories, and I started typing everything out. But then, of course, we encountered a lot of kids on our trips because that was the whole purpose of it. So between that, you know, probably hundreds just between the ones I encountered on my own and then the ones that the three of us encountered to assist. So I can't even, which is a very, very small number. So I can't even imagine how many children have been taken over the years. And this, you know, dates back to, and I'm sure your listeners already know this, this dates back to Operation Paperclip and the Nazi scientists that were experimenting on people in the concentration camps, very much out in the open because it was allowed back then. And then some of those scientists were allowed to sneak into the United States and continue their experiments. So you can only imagine overall how many children have been, and adults, but I was focusing more on the children, but how many children were affected by this?
Yeah, it was a difficult question, actually. Hundreds of thousands of children, as well as adults, go missing in the US every year. It really is mind-boggling. And of course, yeah, it certainly does date back to the concentration camps. And I think Pfizer were one of those companies which were involved with that.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, they go back all that way. And how successful have you been with the children, the deceased children?
I would say very successful. Most of the children moved on, meaning that they crossed over and they moved on to receive assistance, healing their trauma, and they were no longer caught in a cycle of pain. There were only a couple of kids, teenagers, when we went out to Montauk. Again, that was our very first trip. We didn't know what the hell we were doing. When we went out there to Camp Hero, there were a couple of teenagers who said, "We don't want your help." And they just went back into the cave or wherever they were being kept. So I guess they were programmed to the degree that they didn't even want that help. Some of the kids would communicate that they had also been abducted by ETs. And when they would see this light to cross over, they immediately associated it with ETs. And so they were scared to go to that light, understandably. So it was in those kids, it was working with them to help them understand there's a difference between the two kinds of light. With the kids who talked about being abducted by extraterrestrials, they would also share their story. Sometimes how they were taken, sometimes they weren't quite sure, but they could talk about what was done to them after they had been taken. So I would say very successful. Not only the kids that we spoke with directly, but also we were told by another person that there were other children listening that we didn't see consciously who also moved on. So there were a lot others that we never actually interacted with, but they were listening and they moved on as well.
And have you ever been approached by any adults that have been mixed up in this program?
I have not been approached by any adults who were experimented upon and murdered through these types of situations.
Okay. So obviously no one living as well. I mean, we do have a lot of listeners to this show, and anyone out there that have been subjected and are looking for some kind of relief or guidance, where would you suggest that they could go?
Well, as far as living people, I did talk to one man who lives in Canada, has stated that he's been tortured multiple times through the different MKUltra type programs. And he talks in length about it, but I'm not so sure he's talking anymore. He tries to keep things under wraps. But when people are in a state of pain, they do need to find a place where they can talk about it without judgment. They need to be able to, they need assistance in discerning what happened and how they can process that pain, the fear, the anger, the anxiety, the depression, in order to move on from it, because that's that's the point, is to move on from that pain, to heal from that trauma, so that people can experience living and joy and love and expression and creativity. To me, that's the whole point of living, is to enjoy life and to be passionate about life and to interact with humanity and enjoy creating things and expression and your relationships. And it's really hard to do that if you are riddled with anxiety and anger. So it's important to find a safe person to help you process through the information, where they're not going to judge you, they're not going to force you to do anything, they're not going to suggest anything, meaning it's important that you are receiving assistance from someone who's not going to put ideas in your mind of what happened to you that are false. That is also very important. That would be my suggestion, is just to find that legitimate, helpful person.
There's certainly help out there, yeah, for sure. You were saying about the aliens, you know, they're mixed up in this to a degree. Obviously, we have ones which are dealing with this. Some others are doing their own thing, you know, other projects and so it's all not all abductions are just related to these kind of programs. There seems to be many different areas and things that they are actually exploring. Your experience, what with the Greys, their direct connection is with, and why they want to do this?
From what I have learned, where the Greys are from, whatever planet they're from, they essentially destroyed. But before they destroyed it, they destroyed their emotional body, or in other words, their ability to feel and process emotions. You know, there's some people who say that their ultimate goal is to take over the Earth. I don't know. I just know that that is out there. That theory is out there. Their role, though, I do want to say first, we cannot, or at least I cannot, lump all species or all one particular species in one category. So I don't want to say that all Greys have a dark agenda. A lot of Greys do. They have a desire to achieve something in particular. They experiment with how pain feels emotionally to certain people. I'm sure they have a variety of different experiments that they want to accomplish, but I don't want to say that they're all negative. Maybe most of them are, but I don't want to say all of them. Same with the reptilians. I don't want to say that all reptilians are negative. And then there's others where I don't know their name. I mean, I don't know what they're called. I could vaguely say what they look like, but I don't really know what they're called. And then there are also the ones I think you just mentioned a moment ago that have an agenda that is to assist the Earth or perhaps assist humanity. I've been told that there are 60 plus species, let's say 65 species, who visit the Earth regularly.
Yep, they're all doing various different tasks and projects and that.
It's been quite a journey. It's been quite the adventure the last 6 years.
Especially a learning curve as well.
Yes, there has been a learning curve.
You know, you didn't foresee years ago that this is the kind of thing you'd be kind of mixed up in. And obviously you have medium abilities.
Yes, I do. I work as a medium. I have since 2008. My father is a medium, so it's something that I grew up with. He's a different kind of medium, though, but still a medium nonetheless. I was a school teacher. I have my education in, my college degrees are in education and public administration. But in 2008, I decided to begin working with the public as a medium. The work that I do with clients is usually not to connect with the deceased family member or loved one. I actually connect people with their guides for life guidance and other beings to help them understand why certain things are happening, how they can change certain things, how to heal from trauma, that type of thing. And also basic logistical things. Some people want help with their career or their work or their finances, but usually it has to do with healing and moving in the direction of experiencing a joyful life. and how we can be in charge of our own reality so that we have that experience of a joyful life and taking responsibility for ourselves and our lives. That's the majority of the work that I do with clients as a medium.
And if some of our listeners out there wanted to connect with you, can they do it via your website at silentwhispersbook.com?
Silentwhispersbook.com is just my blog, a site for my book, has information for both Silent Whispers books. My work website is empowermentthroughhealing.org, which has more information on my medium work specifically.
Great stuff. Okay, well, I'll put all the links in the show notes below. So anyone that want to reach out to you, they can, and also pick up a copy of Silent Whispers. Do you ever actually find that you are having problems when you're kind of getting involved in this kind of thing? You know, an unusual activity.
Well, yeah. I mean, there was a lot of non-physical, meaning ghost activity in and out of the house. Sometimes it would start bringing me down. I would start feeling down. And then, of course, the extraterrestrial activity that actually is starting to increase again, but nothing like what I was talking about earlier with the, you know, being scared and stuff like that.
I mean, emotionally as well, you know, dealing with the children which have gone through, you know, some of these experiences, I imagine it's quite difficult.
When I was listening to their stories, yeah, there were times where I would feel sick. I would literally feel ill in my stomach based on what I was hearing because it was so horrific. What I get out of it is they receive the assistance and they move on and they're able to heal from that and really release that trauma fairly quickly once they've moved on. And that's the part I hold on to.
And that's rewarding, isn't it?
It is.
Of course it is.
One thing I didn't talk about in the interview, it is in my book, is remote viewing. And, you know, anyone can go to the CIA website and type in remote viewing in the search bar. And last time I checked, though, it was no longer activated. I had to do some digging in order to get back to it. But the CIA does talk about remote viewing and how they trained people to do it. But supposedly it stopped. But on just about every trip, after the first two, I think, every trip after that, we had a military or government remote viewer enter our space, the house we would be renting, and tell us to stop, sometimes with meaningless, useless threats. But they would always do it through being a remote viewer. And I would see them because I can see that type of energy, and they would communicate. There was one time where they came into where we were renting in Albuquerque. When we were there, we were all taking a nap and they came in and walked around and then left real quick and slammed the door before we could see what they looked like. So we've had a couple of experiences like that.
Well, Tammy, I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing all that with our listeners.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate being on your show.
That's great, Tammy. Thank you so much.
All right. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. Special thanks to Tammy for sharing tonight, and thank you for listening. I will be back next week with more encounters. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.